It's been a while since we've done one of these. Does everybody want to do a quick intro? Matt, you're always full of enthusiasm for intros. Do an intro. Intro yourself. Come on, man. Go.
Intro. Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Pennington. I'm part of the game team. I'm one of the four people who together run Empire. I'm here with my colleagues from the game team, Andy, who is in charge of all the campaign, and Claire, who's our game director, who's in charge of everything. So we thought we'd do a podcast because we haven't done a podcast in ages and ages. So, here we are. And we're going to talk about PvP. Was that a good enough intro, Andy?
That was perfectly adequate, yes. Nobody would believe we're not professional podcasters. Right. Okay. What are we talking about today, Claire?
So for the first one back after a while, we thought we'd go in with an easy topic. And we want to talk about PvP. So when we're talking about games and LARP, we talk about PvP and we talk about PvE, which is player versus player and player versus environment. So player versus environment is you versus the game organizers and the monsters and the enemies, and player versus player is you being in competition with other players. So PvP has a bit of a bad reputation in LARP, but I think that's changing, and we want to talk about how it's not necessarily a bad thing and how it works in Empire.
Absolutely. For a long time, when people say PvP, they mean fighting, physically fighting, fighting other people's characters, killing people, ganking folk outside of the toilets. We use PvP in a much broader sense to refer to any situation where two or more players are competing with each other, which is why we often describe Empire as a political or a social PvP game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think a lot of the bad rep comes from that combat element. Lots of people don't like killing other people's characters. Lots of people don't like having their characters killed by other players. It can leave a bad taste in people's mouths. And often it produces stories where your character's death is really quite abrupt and doesn't seem like a cool story. You don't die in a heroic way in PvP combat. There's no glorious charge against the other line. Just some people jump on you out of the bush, murder you and run off very quickly. It doesn't always go down that way. There's plenty of PvP combat that's awesome, but it can be quite flat. And so we made a deliberate choice with them. We'd always run PvP games. It's the kind of games we favour and we like. And I think we made a big choice with Empire, didn't we, to say we want to do PvP, but we want to focus on social, political, economic, religious. We want to basically focus on all the social interactions at PvP and then de-emphasise all the combat PvP and put something else there instead.
Which is why...
Yeah, we wanted killing to be an absolute last resort, not your first...
Yeah, and that's why you have the legal system in Empire, because it's an avowedly PvP system. But if you don't have a big reason why you shouldn't just kill your opponents, i.e. you're going to get caught and executed for it, then it becomes the obvious go-to strategy for people. And so we tried to be clear at the start of the campaign about what the playstyle we wanted people to adopt was, and then we've tried to build a game that reinforces and supports that.
We also talk about player with player, because it's not always about competition, it can be about cooperation. But when it comes to the way we've set the game up, almost everything that people are doing in play, certainly on the field at Anvil, to some degree fuels this idea of players competing with each other. Buying and selling stuff, voting is the most obvious example. We've built voting in all over the game, where people make decisions about what is going to happen. And they are almost always in competition with each other, rather than with NPCs would be the obvious comparison.
Voting's a good one, because I think it's easy to think of voting as voting for somebody, but voting for somebody is also voting against somebody else.
Yeah, every time you vote, you're taking part in PvP. You're choosing an outcome over a different outcome that other people prefer. It's only if every single person votes for the same thing and the same person and the same side of the issue, then it probably wasn't PvP. But we try really hard to set up situations where that doesn't occur, where in fact all the votes and the issues and the positions are contentious. And so if you're engaging in politics in Empire, if you're voting, you're engaging in politics, you're engaging in PvP. That's what we're trying to, that's the experience we're trying to deliver.
Just expressing an opinion about something that's happening in game at its most basic level is PvP. You are telling people that you favour an outcome or that you'll support somebody who thinks the same way that you do, which is incidentally is one of the purposes our Winds of Fortune serve. But another way, because that lets people know what it is that that is worth having an opinion about.
I think it's really interesting, like even just saying something can be PvP in our game. If I say death to the Druge, on the face of it, that's quite an anodyne statement. It's like, oh yeah, we should kill the Druze. They're our enemies. They're bad guys. All of those things are true. But the implication of loudly proclaiming death to the Druze has moral implications for how the Empire should act in its war. It has military implications about how the Empire should apportion, send its armies. It has philosophical implications about how you should deal with the Druze and what you should and shouldn't do in your interactions with them. So even something as simple as just shouting a slogan of death to the Druze is PvP in a political game. Everything in our game is ultimately meant to be important. The things you say and do are all relevant.
The other thing we've built in, I think, which I think is worth talking about a little bit, as it's such a key element of the game, are the ambitions, the titles, the positions, the powers, the resources that come with them, all that sort of stuff.
So in the game, there are a lot of titles, or quite often you hear them referred to as hats. And these are sort of named positions in the game. Things, the obvious ones are things like our senators and our generals, our archmages, our cardinals. But there's how many titles in the game?
Hundreds. I could check if you like. I think it's about 300-400. It's about 300-400.
Yeah, so these are everything from your MPs to the treasurer of the local WI. And they've all got different things that they have either responsibility towards or an income that might provide them or a plot point that might go with it.
389 titles in the game that are currently active. The titles are really important to the PvP of Empire because one of the things we identified in the years of running games that were PvP is that if you want highly political PvP, you need to have structures and mechanics and systems in place that support it. And the political frameworks of Empire, the Senate, the Conclave, the Synod, the Military Council, the Bourse, and all the attendant titles around them are part of the structures that support and enable PvP, and they do that in a number of ways. If you hold one of those titles, they give you powers that you can wield in the game, so they have concrete effects. But then they're also, you can compete over getting them, and that in and of itself is PvP. So all those interactions around trying to acquire one of those titles, and then all the interactions that flow once you've got one of those titles, are all part of our political game. But they wouldn't exist if the concept of titles didn't exist. If it was just a one-man, one-vote democracy system, all of that structure and detail and kind of things you could achieve and successes you could have would go away. So we deliberately created that structure to enable PvP.
And we created a lot of the titles ourselves because we needed them for the game to function. But since then, we've put a lot of title creation in player hands, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely. And many of those titles are quite simple, like sinecures or ministries, where it just gives you access to some economic resources that you normally have. But they'll often come with responsibilities. Increasingly, they might, if we've got quests, they might be tied to a sinecure or a ministry that's being threatened. So they are significant from a role-playing perspective, significant from a campaign perspective, and they give you some abilities, minor abilities. But there are titles that the players have created. The ambassadors were created by the players. We didn't put those into play. The quartermaster general, who decides which imperial armies get resupplied, that was created by the players. There's some really significant, important powers and titles and positions. The bursar of the conclave, which is a really subtle and important position, created by the players. And they have real significant, meaningful powers. And all of those titles are also part of our PvP game.
I think we want to distinguish here, don't we, between personal resources and sinecures. One of them is yours, and one of them is the empires that you hold for a while.
Yes. Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. There's a tendency where, you know, a sinecure costs a lot of money to build, and players fund the creation of the sinecures, and then they claim that the sinecure belongs to them because they paid for it. Well, that's just a fallacy. It's just categorically wrong. You do not own a sinecure, even if you pay for it. It's not yours. It belongs to the Empire. It's the property of the Empire, and the Empire may allocate it to you. They may allow you to run it and operate it and hold that title, but it's not yours under any circumstances or any definition. Legally, the Empire is very, very clear on this. And philosophically, as a game, it's really clear. That's not yours. You don't own it. You might be in possession of it at the moment, but it's not yours. Now, your resource, that's yours. Almost impossible for the game to take that off you. That belongs to your character, and we are very careful with plot. We don't go after people's resources. We go after people's sinecures and ministries and blow them up all the time, but we almost never, very, 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 very rarely, to people's resources. They're kind of off limits to us. So if you want to own it and you want to upgrade it and invest in it, that's what your resource is for. If you want to fight over something in the Empire, then, you know, make a sinecure, make a ministry.
Of course, I paid for it. It's a sound campaigning platform, but it's a campaigning platform.
Yes, absolutely. It's a political line that you can use in the PvP, but it is just that. It's just a political line that you're employing.
Indeed, arguably, when it comes to the political PvP, as long as you stay on the right side of the in-character, out-of-character boundary, there aren't many tactics that we have said aren't acceptable. Corruption, bribery, threats, canvassing, all that kind of behaviour. Sorry? Paying for your vote, or because your vote has worth. So even if you're not somebody who's going for a title, the fact that other people want it means that your vote, your ability to decide who gets something, immediately becomes something that you should, arguably, get other people to recognise the value of that vote. And all of that kind of behaviour is not only fine, but encouraged, I think.
Yeah, we occasionally see some sort of, you know, there's an element sometimes where people expect sort of almost 21st century democratic morality to seep in. You know, if I turn up at the game with a purse full of money and go around and literally just buy everyone's votes, people are like, oh, well, that's not fair. You just bought those votes. You know, we would not regard that as legitimate in a modern democratic election for the candidate to just buy the votes of people, although, you know, there's a lot of corruption happens in democracy. But it's absolutely legitimate in Empire. Empire is a game with PvP. Any mechanism that's in character that you can use to get those votes, to get the support, to get players to support you, is 100% legitimate. You can be in character criticised for buying the votes, but out of character, your behaviour is beyond reproach. You are absolutely playing the game the way it was intended to be played.
There's a common saying at live roleplay, which I think is really relevant when we're talking about voting, which is that friends are OP.
Yeah.
Friends are OP.
That while the game is player versus player, players competing with one another, one of the good tactics for making sure you can get the outcome you want is to find people you can cooperate with.
Yeah, you're right there, because player versus player doesn't mean you versus everybody. Mm. It means you versus that person, or your group versus that group, or your group versus that nation, or this group of nations versus that group of nations, or everybody who wants to kill the Druge versus everybody who wants to kill the Grendel.
Yeah. And friends are overpowered. It's absolutely very, very effective in Empire to turn up with a bunch of your mates with a common agenda. We often talk about in characters creation, we encourage, but sometimes people coming from a tabletop background will think that the point is to make their character, and I'll be a fighter or I'll be a wizard. But actually, if you're coming to Empire, the best way to come to the game is with a group of friends who've got a common identity and a common agenda, because then you can work together and you've got a theme that carries your characters. And that's much more important than whether you're a fighter or a wizard, because friends are overpowered. If you've got four people who are absolutely backing you to a hilt, that's really powerful. But it won't make you the throne. It won't get you the throne. It won't make you a senator by itself. You'll need to get cooperation and collaboration with scores of other people. And that's, you know, that's that it's a game of influence, of buying and selling influence, not necessarily for money, favors, you know, political scratch your back, scratch my back. And friends are powerful there, not for the votes they give you, but for the fact that if you're campaigning for a position, they're out there campaigning for you to get that position. That's the real power of friends in a political game. They're a force multiplier. It isn't that the raw power they give you, it's the fact they go out there and fight your cause alongside you. But it's the fighting the cause that is what the game is about. And for that, you've got to interact with hundreds of other players, try to persuade them to do what you want to do.
And there's a lot of nuance to it. You can start with friends, you can have your group, but just as effective is creating new friends or having friends thrust upon you because the other person is much less popular than you are or has done something somebody else doesn't approve of. It's really easy, I find, in my experience of PvP games, to get a bit despondent that there are these power blocks that can't be challenged. Yes. But we see again and again in the game the things that throw the light to that. We have brand new players to the game who will, through force of personality or cleverness or just good luck, claim a title that everybody else assumed was sewn up, because it wasn't a sewn up. The silent majority is as real a thing in Empire as it is in the real world democratic setups. And recognizing things like that can shift the status quo. And we love to see the status quo get taken around the back of the gas sheds and given a kicking.
There's another thing I think is worth saying about PvP, which is something I used to talk about 25, 30 years ago when I was playing a very different game on an August bank holiday, that the glorious thing about PvP, if you turn up at Empire as a lone character and it's your first event, you say, yeah, my goal is I'm going to become the next Empress, and you go around the field and you try and persuade everyone, you're going to have a really difficult time. You've set yourself the most ambitious goal in the game, and you are up against people with huge power blocks behind them, and you've got nothing to offer. You're basically, it's like you've set out on your first day ever of rock climbing, and you've said, I'm going up Mount Everest, I just need Sherpas. You won't find anyone. Everyone will be like, no, you. It can be quite hard for a new player coming to the game. Maybe you don't have that many friends, you don't know that much about it, and you think, well, I don't know what my agendas are, I don't know what my ambitions are. The easy way to get into Empire is to go around and ask people, what are you doing and how can I help? You're going to meet 100 players who've got an ambition and agenda, and all you have to do is make yourself useful to that person in any way you can. And A, you'll have a great time because you've now got an agenda. It's their agenda, but it's also your agenda because you've made it your agenda. And you've just made yourself a political ally and a friend. And friends are overpowered. So you don't actually, you know, in a game where there are enough political active people, you don't need to come with a fully formed plan to take over the world. You can turn up and just piggyback off other people's ambitions to have fun and get yourself involved in the game and start playing those game of politics. And you'll soon find that one person's goal is incompatible with another. So you'll soon have some friends and you'll soon have some enemies. And that is the you know, the secret to having a good time.
Don't betray your enemies. Claire.
What that says is ties in with what we were saying earlier about voting, because there are ways to increase your number of votes in things, but in general, your vote is the same as a player who's been playing for 2 years or 5 years. It's got value to it, and you've got that thing to sell. You can go up to the next group and go, who should I be voting for?
Yeah.
And what's my vote worth?
We deliberately designed the game so that, you know, a starting player's votes are significant and meaningful. And a starting player will have 10 votes in most elections, 10 votes for a senator or 10 votes for a boss position or so forth. And a really experienced and capable player who's spent years playing the game and investing in their resource might have as many as 16 votes. Now, 16 is more than you've got. But it's not so many more that he's just going to go, oh, well, I don't care about your 10 votes. That's not going to happen. Not if they're a capable and experienced player of Empire. They're going to care about your 10 votes. There are people right now, you know, changing the status quo with Empire by going around talking to new players about their votes and what they're using them for. And that's wonderful. It's great to see. But it's back to that PvP element. Your votes give you power. our game is about wielding power in a million different ways, and our aim is to break that power up and spread it around everyone attending the game. You don't all get the same amount, but you all get some power, and then we want you to have fun wielding your power in lots of different ways. The point is, although Empire is an avowedly PvP game, it's not the only thing that Empire offers. There's lots of other things happening in Empire that people come to the game for and they want to play. And Claire, you talk a lot about Empire versus Anvil. Is that right?
It's Empire and Anvil.
And I think that goes to the heart of it. So talk about that.
So I think in many ways there's two games running. We have Empire running and we have Anvil running. Empire is the politics and the Senate and the manoeuvring, the winds of fortune, the winds of war. What's going on? And Anvil is our city that we go and live in and exist in. So Anvil is the tea shops and the theatre and the buskers on the corner and songs and stories and all sorts of things like that. And that's the world. And then Empire is the political machine that operates over it. So a lot of Anvil the game has elements of Empire in it. They're not mutually exclusive games, but they are coexisting separate things.
Yeah, and I think I would argue there's a third game, which is outside of Anvil, which is, you know, the big battles against the orcs. And I appreciate you can argue, well, that's all part of the Anvil game. But I think in terms of what people come to Empire for, some people come because they want to experience life in Anvil, life in Empire. They want to go to Songs and Stories and visit the restaurants. And they want that ambience and that world to live in. Some people come because they want to do, they're red hot for the politics and they want to play that game. And some people come because they love the big battles. So I do think of them as three quite different games, all happening in the same field at the same time.
One of the reasons I don't entirely agree with you on battles, but I enjoy the fact that we have separate opinions, is I think you can come to Anvil and not worry too much about battles and skirmishes. But when it comes to Anvil and Empire, with those two modes of play, you can't do the politics of the game without interacting with people in the world, without going places, without visiting the theatre and having cups of tea. But at the same time, you can't, if you're just there for the living history kind of arrangement, for the being in Anvil, you can't ignore the fact that there is a political game going on. My example, I'm going to jump in before anybody steals it, is that you can be a small business owner at King's Landing, and that's great, and you can get on with things. But if a dragon turns up to burn down the city, you can't opt out of having your little shop burnt down by the dragons. The only way to make sure your tea shop stays safe is to pay attention to the political landscape that is kind of unfolding around you and aiming dragon fire at your little shop.
I would disagree just very slightly. There's no way to make sure your tea shop remains safe. No. There is ways to try and make it safer. You know, we've seen a few times when the campaign has turned and you know, the military council politics mean a nation gets left isolated and invaded and is getting beaten up badly by the orcs because the military council has sent armies elsewhere. That's plain and simple why that happens. And the PvP means that your nation takes a hammering and your coffee shops get burned down effectively. And you can't, as Andy says, you can't just opt out of that. You can't say, well, I didn't come for that game, so no thanks. It's the world. It is one game we're all playing. Equally, and this is quite important, the political players don't get to say, well, those people have only really come here for Song and Story, so they shouldn't get a vote. They shouldn't be allowed to take part in the elections. They're just drinking the tea houses all day. It's not fair that they've turned up, that my political opponent has rounded up all the drunks from the tea houses and brought them all along to this election, and now I haven't won my post. Neither the political people do not get to ignore the people in Anvil. You know, nobody, everybody's playing in the same world and they're all playing the same game. All of this is one thing, so no one gets to ignore any part of it.
Yeah. Yes, basically. They're all interlink.
They're all interlink, yeah. And that's by design. It's absolutely deliberate. We wanted it to be, you know, and we wanted, to an extent, to people to be able to opt into the games they wanted to pursue, But we didn't want people to be able to say, yeah, I've opted out of that bit. That bit doesn't affect me. It's like, we could have run that game. We think it would have been weak sauce. And we were not interested in creating it. We think it's done.
Your options are sort of out of character, aren't they? You can opt not to be involved in combat.
Yeah.
But you can't opt not out of the in-character effects of that combat later.
Yeah.
Onto the multi-layered trifle that is the anvil and politics and battles. We add either the delicious creamy topping or the delicious spongy base, depending on which way we do it, of plot, because the game isn't solely a PvP game. While it's very strongly, while players are powerful and can change the shape of the game, they aren't the only ingredient that is going into an Empire campaign. Who wants to talk about plot? I'm not going to do it because I spent the weekend talking about plot.
I say you can tell his job is words, can't you?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. It seems odd almost, but I remember, you know, we've run PvP games for a long time and we've agonised over plot for years about, well, what can we and can't we do? And if you say, well, the focus of this game is the interaction of players, the first instinct as a designer is to say, well, we mustn't mess with that. We don't want to... The last thing we want to do as game organisers is have any role in who gets to be the throne, or who gets to be a senator, or who gets to be a general. Even the thought of getting involved in that is like repugnant to us. It's like, oh, that's the players to decide. And so the simplest way to achieve that would be for us to do nothing. The problem with that approach is that the game becomes very stable and very stagnant. Players work out what their alliances are, they work out all the agreed compromises, they settle on what the outcomes need to be, and the game can become very stale and stagnant. Almost the only thing that upsets it is new players coming in, which is somewhat artificial. Instead of that, in Empire, we said, no. The Empire is threatened on all sides by giant barbarian forces. It has internal pressures, it has Eternals that are causing problems, it has foreign nations causing problems. There are cults, there are bad people everywhere, and these people are none of these people are as important as the players. Cthulhu is never going to rise from the depths and threaten the whole world with his big tentacles in Empire. It's not happening, because if he did that, he would be more important than a senator or a general. It would be just intrinsically, he would be the most significant character in the scene. We don't do that. But what we do is have very important things happening that the players are not in control of, but they get to respond to and dictate how the Empire responds to. The analogy I use is weather. It's you're turning up with all your pre-played plans for what you're going to do for the weekend, but then you discover PD have decided it's raining and you didn't pack your rain gear. Now you've got to you've got to change your plans to take account. So there's... The weather doesn't set the agenda. What it does is it causes constant pressure and turmoil and unpredictability that means people are constantly having to make new plans. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with plot. We're trying to stir the field and keep it changing and chaotic and complex without seizing control of the agenda.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's when you get a group of people, there's a tendency to make things balance and make things fair and maintain a status quo wherever you can, and that's brilliant whilst that's what you're striving towards, but once you achieve it, what then?
Yeah, once your goals are met, what then? Well, the answer is PD has probably shifted the goalpost 10 inches while you were shooting.
And put some more under the field, yeah.
I've put some more down, yes.
It's one of the reasons why I think we're keen to make sure that when we do create this kind of weather, there's no correct answer to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really interesting. The idea of there being a correct way to play the game or a correct way to solve the plot.
Yeah, I think players who are sort of new to Empire sometimes assume that there might, that, you know, we'll put a problem up in a Wind of Fortune. We'll go, the mountainside has collapsed. It has revealed a giant pile of Orichalcum. The Fool claim it, the Empire claims it. What are you going to do? It's just an example of something we might do. Now, you might assume that there is a precise solution to the problem that pleases everyone, that there's an outcome where everyone goes, oh, that was it. You've solved the Gordian knot. You found a way to make everybody happy. Well, we're trying as organisers to make sure that simply doesn't exist. Because if there was a solution that made everyone happy, everyone would vote for it, at which point there wouldn't be the conflict and the pressure between people to drive different agendas. So anytime there's a solution where everyone agrees, then it's not plot. If everyone agrees, then it's not a plot in our game. It's only a plot when PCs disagree with PCs about what you should do about it. And so we're trying to throw up problems and situations to be dealt with where players will disagree over what to do. And where there's no outcome that makes everyone happy. There are just outcomes that make one group happier than another group.
Yeah, and the results of that will go and go, won't they? Because that slight will be remembered in 3 months' time.
So, because what I was going to say is that doesn't mean you shouldn't try and strive to find a way to make everybody happy, because the plot is like to have gradients. There is an outcome that makes one group of people very unhappy. You might be able to find an outcome that makes that group of people somewhat unhappy, or that makes everybody just a little bit unhappy, rather than making some people very happy and some people very unhappy. And part of the PvP game is pushing your preferred outcome for these sort of situations. And we know from our players that there are plenty of players on that field whose preferred outcome is that the other people get very angry indeed.
Yeah.
Even then, though, the way we've talked about this, we've talked about outcomes, and I think it sounds a bit like we've run this plot, the answers are A, B, C, or D, and you should pick one. But there's not. The answer is the answer that player comes up with.
It is, but it's worth bearing in mind that... we often talk in plot about indivisible pies. If we throw an apple into the Senate and it says on it for the fairest, you can't solve that problem by everybody agreeing that everyone is equally fair and we're going to split the apple into 3,000 pieces and we'll all get one piece each. We would write that plot in such a way that you couldn't cut the apple up. Somebody gets the magic apple. Because it's too easy to create a solution that makes everyone happy by dividing everything equally. So the simple solutions won't work. It doesn't mean that the solutions that are presented are the only solutions. That's definitely true. It just means that there isn't a solution where you just go, well, we made them wave the magic wand and everyone's happy. It's like, no, if that solution existed, the civil service would have told you about it already, or PD would have come up with a reason why it doesn't work.
So I think what I'm trying to explain is, and this isn't my field of expertise in the game, when you're writing plot, you don't write a story with a beginning, middle and finish.
No.
You might have an idea of a finish that could happen.
Yeah. I think if you think about the Winds of Fortune, I think this is really important to stress. Me and Andy don't write a story at all. Me and Andy, I think we write probably about 90% of the Winds of Fortune between us, Andy. Maybe 80%. We write a lot and we do the editing on all of them between us. Let's take an example, which is a dangerous thing to do, and Andy might have to cut it. We ran a plot where we said there are problems afoot in Bregger's Land. People are unhappy. You could send the militia in and that will make everyone unhappy. You could let these people off and that will make everyone unhappy. Or you could do this thing here and give them what they've asked for and that will make everyone unhappy. Now, they're all different groups of people who are going to be unhappy and there were different problems. We gave basically zero thought of any kind to what would follow on from one of those three decisions. None whatsoever. And the reason is because it would be a shit ton of work and we genuinely have no idea which one the players are going to pick. So we literally gave it no thought of any kind at all. We created the problem and the dilemma. We put it out there to the players and we'll find out. We'll tune in after the event to find out what the players have done. And then we'll think about how the world reacts to that. And then we'll create the next thing that follows. But in no way, shape or form is it a pre-planned plot story where we've got each episode ready to go. The reality is, everything you see as you go into an event, certainly in the Winds of Fortune, is effectively 95% of everything we've written. That's it. That represents the sum totality of all the work we've done, I think, within those plots. Not as true. Some of our writers will think more about where they're going to go with a wind, but I don't give it any thought at all.
Which brings us back roughly to where we started, which is to say, while it can be doing a lot of stuff, the main purpose of our plots at Empire is to encourage players to compete and to disagree and to talk about what they want and to make decisions. At the end of the day, that is what it's about. And we are much more interested in a way, I mean, it's quite this way, in a way in you making the decision and the outcome of the decision.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, the reason we don't write plots with simple solutions, the reason we write plots that are designed to pit players against players, is because we're very clear-sighted about the fact that the focus of our game is the interactions between the players, because it's a PvP game, because that's absolutely the emphasis of what we're doing, then that's how we create our plot. A plot is designed to support, encourage, and promulgate PvP in the field.
We're doing a podcast about PvP, but I can see that we're going to need to do one about plot soon, not least because it's something that Matt and I, at the very least, really get quite enthusiastic and passionate about. But I'm going to try another segue. All of this conflict can lead to bleed. Who wants to take bleed?
So bleed is that bit but where your character meets you. And one of our players described it in an email to me a couple months ago in a way that I think is really good and I've kept thinking about, is that your character still runs on your real life hardware. So when your character experiences something deeply emotional, whether that's a high or upsetting, the sort of physiological responses are still your body.
Yeah.
And you may have the hangover from those later, after the game, either way, up or down. And the obvious one is character. When you lose your character, you've lost something that you've put time and emotion and money and thought, and you have friendships that you will feel you've lost. And it's understandable that that affects you in real life as well. I'm sad when I've only ever lost one LARP character, so I'm a terrible example of this. But I was sad about that. I only played here for 2 days.
But does that have to be actual character loss? If you've built your entire thrust of your game around becoming a senator, and then on the final day somebody else beats you and you don't get that, it is really easy and okay to feel bad, to be upset, to be sad that you've lost that opportunity, to be annoyed at the other person, all those types of emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think sometimes bleed is talked about like it's a bad thing. And it's not bad. I think it's a natural consequence of using your emotions and your effort and your energy to do something and either succeeding brilliantly, because you could be on a high on Monday because you became Empress last night, or you could be devastated on Monday because Andy Raff burnt down your sinecure.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a tendency sometimes, I think, to think of you know, that the in theory, the concept of live role-playing is it's a game, we're all pretending, and none of this is real, so none of this matters. But the whole ideal of immersion, of being immersed in your character and thinking and feeling and as your character does, and one of the things with PvP that can make it stronger is we encourage you to identify with your character's agendas, to want to achieve the things your character wants to achieve. So you're going to think and feel these things, and then the idea that somehow your character felt them but you didn't feel them doesn't really make any sense to me. I think it's crazy to think that bleed won't happen. And so, yes, you know, it's absolutely natural to feel a sense of out-of-character frustration, to feel a sense of out-of-character grief at death of your character or your friend's characters, to feel devastated when you're out of character, when your character's goals are thwarted. And there's an element where that's a positive about the game. You're coming to the game to feel the highs and the lows that your character experiences. The question is then how you deal with them. You know, and I think the correct barrier is not to say, oh, you shouldn't be feeling these things. But, you know, we should all understand you're going to feel these things. It's perfectly natural. The correct barrier is to say, but you don't bring them back into the game. You could be in character furious at someone, but don't be out of character furious at someone. You know, don't bitch and moan that your opponent won the election out of character. You know, just think, I'll take them down next time. Respond to the game in character and play it in the way it's meant to be played, and understand that, like a board game, losing is part of it, and that's, you know, it's part and parcel of it.
And both ways, because we have to accept that people are going to feel these things and people are going to have these responses, and these responses aren't something you can control completely. So having a bit of empathy doesn't hurt either.
No, totally. I often used to say years ago that, you know, I would, when I went to games, I would look for people whose PvP flag was up. You know, I would look for people who enjoyed the conflict with my characters and try and focus my efforts towards them. You know, if you sense that somebody's really out of character, struggling with the conflict with your character, you know, find a way to back away and focus it in a different direction. Because it's no fun. If you're a decent human being, it's no fun pissing on someone's chips. It's just not. You want to bring your game to the people who want to really be your rivals and thwart you. And so it's not just about, but it's about appreciating that people can struggle with it, you know, as you will struggle with it when you're thwarted, you know, and being empathic and sympathetic with that and letting them have a space so they can deal with it. Yeah.
Which feeds in, I suppose, to participant welfare. So if this happens at events, we've got participant welfare team who aren't mental health first aid, but are a space where you can go and just get a bit of support and have a cup of tea and sit down and a chat with somebody, or just a cup of tea and sit down somewhere quiet if you want. And you can get them in the field through anybody with a radio, basically. They'll come to you and help you.
Yeah, we're there to help if we can. If, you know, if you're struggling with any part of the bleed or the game.
Sometimes I think LARP is about getting to that point where you get the, you know, those perfect moments when you are your character and the world is real.
Yeah. I've always said that for me, live role-playing happens at the moment I stop thinking, what would my character do next? And just think as my character. My character just does. I don't stand there and think, right, what would my character do? I just act and think and be them, and that for me is when the game kind of goes to that next level and just becomes magical, and just becomes an experience that you cannot get. I defy in any other hobby. You can get immersive theatre, you can get immersive films and books, but you do not. I've never read a book and had that the sense that you can get from a live role playing game where you're actually there. Actually doing those things, and it's you.
We've spoken for a period of time about PvP. We've mostly stayed on topic, which is always nice, but I think we probably want to do a quick sum up. So PvP and Empire, say something pithy that we can use as a soundbite on the TikToks.
I hate TikTok.
You don't know what TikTok is. So what we're saying is PvP isn't bad, but there are ways to respond to PvP. So a lot of the game is PvP, more of the game than you think necessarily is PvP, and that's okay. And being upset when you're thwarted is also okay. But in all of these situations, it's how you manage it that's the important bit. And the key bit is to assume good faith and show empathy.
Yeah. Empire, I'd say, you know, if I'm naming the pithy, which is not my natural state of being, it's got to be said. Empire is an avowedly PvP game by design. We have a world with 3,500 people in it, all of whom have their agendas and their goals and their ambitions. And you get to go into that world and you get to create your own goals and ambitions and agendas. And our game is absolutely focused on supporting and endorsing the play that comes from being in a world of thousands of people, all of whom have their own ambitions, all of whom have their own goals and agendas, and it's yeah, and that's what Empire is. And if you're into Empire, that's the game we're trying to provide for you.
Your turn.
Yeah, say something pithy for the TikToks, Andy.
I've learnt something today. no, I'm not going to do that. I can't follow the two of you. I'm just going to... I'm not going to use my... I can't follow you two on that one. I'm just going to say one of the things about Empire is that the game world isn't static. We love the people who challenge the status quo, but we also love the people who support the status quo by sticking to their briefs and thinking what their characters want. And change is scary. But mostly, I'm currently just thinking about the plot podcast that we'll be doing after this one, where I can talk at great length about things like, and use words like reify. So thank you all very much for sitting through this. I've no idea how long it's going to be once I've finished editing it. And we hope it's been enjoyable and illuminating, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I want awesome. A final word to agree with Andy. Because we should all finish on a note of agreeing. We love it when play. The reason we run Empire is because we want players to do cool shit. That cool shit might be making a statue. You know, the statues and the decorations and the set dressing, that's cool shit. It looks amazing. I just love it when I see that. It might be song and story or running a tavern. That's amazing. I love it. And it might be some incredible political ambition that your character has. You know, someone has just become the throne. I love it when these things happen. They set out and do these things and achieve these things. We built the world so you could basically go out there and do these things. And yeah, when it happens, it's just brilliant.
Yeah. This is getting dangerously close to feelings.
No, it's all right. I'm going to re-edit this so that I still get the last word. So, So we're going to wave at the camera and say goodbye, I think. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going around in circles trying to outdo each other on how great PvP is. So thank you all very much for coming, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.